Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. If you'd like to leave a voicemail for us, please go to the homepage and click on that little handy dandy voicemail icon, which you'll find on the right hand side. So we welcome to today's podcast and to our Seekers of Meaning microphone, Israel M. Meyerstein, LCSW.
Social worker for 46 years, currently retired in Baltimore, yeah.
Do social workers ever really retire?
Yes, they can.
Oh, wow. I was just wondering, because it's tough for us, clergy, to do that, but anyway. We digress. The book that we want to talk about as a bridge to further conversation is this very fascinating book that Israel wrote, Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness. So thank you, Israel, for making your time available. Here we are. And just give me the genesis of this book, because with a lot of this, it's really personal, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. I had it, in fact. Over 13 years ago, I had a personal encounter with serious medical illness. So I became a patient, I became sick, and I experienced a lot of things very differently as a result of that. I also realized how complicated it is for patients and families to navigate the medical treatment system. It's a little bit like wandering in a labyrinth or a wilderness. And there's a Yiddish saying that says, a small hole in the body creates a much larger hole in the spirit. And that I found that to be true because I found illness to be a challenge, not only on the physical, biological level, but also emotional and spiritual. And during the course of my illness treatment, and I'm happy to say recovery now 13 years later, I discovered and created and used spiritual tools and coping tools from different traditions that I found helped keep me afloat. And when I was recovered, I was very grateful. That became my strongest emotion, and I wanted to help others who are facing illness, because I know it's a really difficult place to be.
Yeah, I love in the beginning of the book, you allude to that Yiddish proverb, a small hole in the body produces a great hole in the soul. And there is, I wanted to go right to that, about the spiritual dimension of illness, recovery, the sense sometimes of psycho-spiritual isolation, mm-hmm. when you're in the system, when you're in this wilderness, and mm-hmm. the metaphor is quite apt. Of the wandering of the Jews in the wilderness, it's very, very profound and meaningful. Could you walk me through a little bit of how you made that linkage in the wilderness, the metaphor, the spiritual challenges of serious illness?
Well, I am very connected to my Jewish tradition, so the wandering of the Jews in the wilderness is a familiar metaphor. I also thought about Reb Nachman's quote, a person walks in life on a very narrow bridge.
Narrow bridge. Right.
And I thought about illness as sort of a narrow, shaky bridge over troubled waters. And I felt that these metaphors kind of resonated with me. And the wilderness is somewhat barren. It's somewhat scary. It even has valleys, like the Valley of the Shadow of Death. But it was both a very touching metaphor for me, but also a hopeful one, because after all, the Jews somehow made it through. And so what I thought about was what was it that they used, or that happened to them in the wilderness, that enabled them to survive? And I felt that that was inspirational to me, also to thinking that I could create my own set of tools that I carried with me and that I practiced that would help me also feel strengthened.
Were there moments of the mountaintop in the journey that you were on in your illness?
I'm not sure exactly what you're meaning.
Were there moments in the journey, because this is it's one of the things that every clergy, when they deal with not only their own illness, but working with illnesses with people in their congregation and the journey that they often accompany their members on, are there moments that there's a certain sense of clarity about life? Or the challenge is searching for the right word, because you use the valley, mm-hmm. but are there other moments of just a sense of freedom, transition, personal transition or transformation? Did you emerge out of your situation changed, different, transformed?
What I found is that turning to spiritual tools that were very meaningful to me actually were very uplifting, whether it was creating my own little three-part prayer service in the morning, certain prayers that I particularly related to, and developing certainly gratitude for recovery. So gratitude became a very important emotion. And I discovered, when I thought about Jewish tradition, I realized that we have so many tools that exist that can help people in normal times, but also in challenging times. And whether they have to do with formal prayers or psalms, which are part of the way tradition deals with illness, or whether they're proverbs and ways of thinking about the world, about one's body, because our tradition is also a very integrated tradition, where when we think about our bodies, it's really our bodies and spirit together. Even like when we say to somebody refuah shlema, or a complete healing, we're thinking immediately of their body and their spirit. Or some of the prayers that have to do with angels talk about, not just things of the practical matter, but also things of the spirit. And so I just found it to be a very rich treasure chest, and I began delving into it more and finding tools that I could relate to my situation that helped strengthen me.
What we find in one of our more requested workshops in Jewish Sacred Aging is this explosion on the part of, especially of boomers, dealing with new rituals, mm-hmm. so, and prayers and meditations. Mm-hmm. Did you find certain rituals that you wanted to create that helped you deal with this? And because you allude to, in your own personal experience, and then did you transfer this into your practice?
I'll start with the second question last. I work with people of different religions and ethnicities, so I didn't always used literally the tools that I found, but I certainly used some. And there's a whole, our culture is very oriented today to not just Jewish culture, but our general culture, to meditation and spiritual tools. It's become a more spiritually oriented culture. So many of those tools, such as meditation and breathing and journaling, and that are sort of out there, available to everybody. So I found that I used a lot of tools, and as I would try something I saw the effect it had on me, I would kind of say, well, that's one of my spiritual coping tools, whether it's yoga or humor or meditation or Jewish prayers. I mean, the particular ones that I gravitated to have to do with the body and the soul. I don't know if you want specifics, but I remember when I was recovering from surgery and I had to like walk very slowly, and I was at home, I created a little three-part service where I would sing to the Debbie Friedman melodies, the prayer Asher Yatzar, which is about how our bodies are made in a divine fashion. And I thought about the meaning of that. I included Elohai Neshama, which is about the connection between our bodies and our souls. And so I used those very specific spiritual tools to help lift my spirit. And I really did a lot of practicing of gratitude. And I put up a wonderful sign by Heschel on my wall at work. It is gratitude that makes the soul great. So I I tried to use different kinds of small tools that helped me, spiritual tools that helped me on a daily basis.
You write a lot about gratitude and the concept in Hakarata Tov. You lead off the book on that. Mm-hmm. And more and more as I, you know, work with families or congregations in developing these programs in congregations, this sense of gratitude, especially as we get older, mm-hmm. Really, really seems to come to the fore. It's like people all of a sudden, even if they've not been ill, mm-hmm. turn around to a point in their life and say, you know something, looking backward, I have a lot to be grateful for. So this midah in Musar, this concept, this value, really, really seems to take precedence. And it's interesting, you really begin your book focusing, if I can say that, on this concept. Talk mm-hmm. to me about what this means to you.
Well, I do tend to be a half full person. So it wasn't that big a stretch to think about the positive. And in my clinical work and just in my life, I tend to try to help point in the direction of positive. So it was an easy transition to think about what to be grateful for. It isn't for everybody. And so I found that there was a lot to be grateful for. And the more I focused on that, it would lift my mood. And so it became it is a reality that we're very lucky to be on this earth, lucky to be alive, lucky to have blessings in our lives. And the difference between focusing on those and being sort of in more of a negative mindset is huge over time. So I just felt that really helped me stay in the positive zone more of the time.
Yeah, I admire that because I'm more of the glass half empty personality, which gets into my way a lot. You have this great quote from Viktor Frankl.
Mm-hmm.
Between stimulus and response is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and freedom.
Mm-hmm.
How the power of choice, you know, people dealing with illness, sometimes, especially as they enter the system, choice seems to be taken away from them. But yet, unpack that quote from Frankl for me in the context of your journey, of the book, of your writing, of how important having that sense of choice is when facing illness.
Well, I also love that quote. And I think it gives us, I think it's a very hopeful quote. You think about who wrote it. It was somebody who survived the Holocaust and with great losses. And if he can say that we have the power to choose our response, and that helps us expand when we choose something that helps us grow. I also love that quote. And I think that it makes us more aware that we can choose how we respond to things. So that's a kind of freedom. And it slows down sort of the process of just automatically assuming something's going to be the way it is. It gives you some possibility for something new happening. So I keep a lot of quotes, including that one. That's right in the center on my wall. I look at it.
You have a wall of quotes?
I do. Right on my desk, I have a wall of quotes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. How do you maintain hope in the sense of a long, protracted illness when you're in the system, as I call it, and it's so easy just to say, you know, I don't know where I am really in this wilderness?
It helps when you feel like you're in the hands of doctors you trust.
Mm-hmm.
It helped me a great deal to develop these tools that I would use. Journaling helped get some of the feelings out of my body. They weren't just sitting there. I put them down on paper. I sought outside resources like acupuncture and an acupuncturist who was supportive. My homeopath gave me some ideas. I did different practices, yoga, writing, nature. I mean, in the book, I have a whole list of what I call spiritual coping tools that are available to pretty much everybody. I call one thing furious weeding to get some anger out. Just went in the backyard and yanked out weeds. So things that help lift the spirit. I just felt that I was, doing those things helped me. I also was helped by it was very important to me to find a doctor because the medical system is difficult, and to find a doctor who you feel is really in your corner and you can talk to. So I was predisposed to that from my profession, be looking for someone who listens to you and who is supportive and who will answer questions. But I think all those different factors helped me feel like I could be active in my own, I use the word agency, this formula that I developed, MAPS, that it was important to check in with my inner spirit to become an advocate. I found quotes very helpful. Like there was a quote, remember you're an individual, not a statistic. So remember it's okay to complain. Don't be too patient to patient. So I found that little encouraging words were also very helpful for me as I encountered different experiences.
Right. One of the gifts of the book is that there are these quotes and passages and little snippets from Jewish tradition, especially throughout the book, that really amplify that. And again, we're talking with Israela Meyerstein on her book, Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness. This is on Amazon bookstores, the usual, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So about a little bit into the book, you talk about, I think it's around page 31, under the basic concept of a spiritual assessment, and you think things to think about and do, and you have about 8 things to talk about. I got to ask you this, because this seems to be one of the most amazing lacks in society. You go to a doctor and you fill out a medical history,
right,
all over the place.
Yeah.
But there's very little emphasis on filling out or creating a spiritual history so that when you enter the system, they know from where you're coming spiritually, which I think is, as you demonstrated, as the statistics and literature are saying, that's really important to the healing process, one's own spiritual journey.
Absolutely.
So this little form, this little question thing to ask yourself, have you run across a real complex or complete spiritual history that people have used? Have you seen one?
Yes, definitely. I would say for sure through the social work field, there are there's a lot written about spiritual assessment, there's more of an emphasis of incorporating that dimension through the counseling aspects, but. It may take a little while to put it into the medical system. Although, on some of the forms, it's now, listed as could it be a spiritual problem also?
Right.
And I think more and more there's a growing awareness that this is important to patients.
Yeah, we've started to see even medical schools starting to talk a little bit about, I have some friends of mine who are teaching spiritual aspects or spirituality to medical students, and it's a fairly new phenomenon,
right?
I think.
Yeah, it's new, but very important, because the patients
very
are coming
important.
From there. Yeah.
And in this country, a variety of really religious backgrounds that don't always conform to classic Western medicine.
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, the whole area of teaching caregivers and doctors and professionals to ask those kind of questions. And I try to list them as kind of very general. So it invites the person to think about it and in regular language. It's not so much really even the religion as much as the outlook. Some people may be very religious, and it's important to respect that and even learn about it. A helping professional
right.
needs to know what their client or patient is, where they're coming from. Especially if spirituality is a very important part of their lives.
Got to ask you about a section in the book that I found fascinating, and I think people would really want to touch base with this. in one of the chapters, you write The Strange World of Dr. Chemo. You talk about, radiation, a less than illuminating experience. Nice pun. Talk to me about that. This is, it's in right here in the middle of the book, but it's really, really, really practical. Talk to me about
that. Yeah. Well, so I'd never been hospitalized. For some tests, and chemo was an old, totally different world. You're in these cubicles, and you're getting these strange medicines intravenously, and it's a long process. Could be 6 or 7 hours, and so I thought it would be interesting to talk about it, as an unusual world to enter, because you enter and it's not like the outside world. And I did find I had ways of coping with it, and I brought along a little kit of things to help me cope with it, and tried to use a little bit of humor, I guess, in that chapter. I still use the prayer when I close my eyes to get blood drawn, and it helps. I really have gotten my batting average of being pricked much down to one. And so I thought it was, because chemo is a very difficult experience for many people, I thought it was really important to talk about bringing a mindset of tools in along with a person. I brought my drawing pencils, and I did diagrams during the chemo administration, partly to distract myself, partly to pray that the particular drugs, I took one of the drugs that was called Abraxane. I'm just looking at it, and I called it Abracadabraxane.
Right.
And so it was my way of exposing what chemo felt like for a patient, but also how to cope with the strange world. Although I had an amazing oncologist, so it was in no way he was very supportive. And the radiation was a very difficult process for me. People didn't forewarn me. They said, oh, it's no big deal. And there were aspects of it that I think were very hard on patients, the way it worked. And so I guess maybe it was a little bit of patient's revenge, calling it a less than illuminating experience. And I thought in some ways the actual experience was not as empowering as I would have liked it to be. So I guess it was my way of exposing some of that. And I did feel at the end of it that when I felt something was, I trusted my own gut and said, this really doesn't feel good for patients the way it's done. And so I actually complained, and that's something I learned to do more of, because I'm not a big complainer. When I talked to the manager of the particular department, and actually it had some effect in improving some things in the waiting room. So it helped me with my ideas about agency and expressing myself.
It's important to have an advocate, is it?
It is, yeah. And whether that's a doctor or family member or somebody who comes along with you, because you would feel better if somebody was with you. Yeah, that's really important.
What are the 7 tips? It's really cool. I mean, here you have, and it really is sort of like a summary of a lot of the things that you're writing about, including some really nice quotes from books that hopefully everybody's looked at, as well as the Talmud.
Thank you.
But you have these 7 tips, I guess, for navigating the wilderness, if I can go back to that imagery that we talked about. How did you evolve? This just arrived organically from your experience?
Well, I think I've been journaling all through my illness experience and writing down ideas. And then this is kind of like a summary of what I took from it, from the, what I experienced, what I did, what worked, what helped me. And I thought it would be a helpful guide to patients. I did feel that the idea of using quotes of other people would also be inspiring. So it was really like a little cliff notes for patients to take responsibility for their to encourage their agency, you know, the illness is not their fault, but it's like the deck of cards a certain way, but we have to play the hand. And so it's really up to the patient to develop a coping response, and that the particular response to the difficulties will make a very big difference in the outcome. So that was one. Another was just to check in with yourself, like you listen to your own heart, because that has to do with your relationship to yourself. And I felt trying to find ways of expressing gratitude helped. That goes back to your other comment earlier about prayer and gratitude, trying to learn from things. So I felt that it was important to check in with your heart. You know, some people get very intellectually focused and don't spend much time interacting with their emotions. And so I thought that was really important to do. Third one was express yourself. And so what the language we use to talk about ourselves and our illness is self-talk is really important. So it's important how you talk to yourself, about your illness, about your situation. And the poem that I used from Marianne Williamson was about encouraging people to not play small, but to try to help their light shine. Flexibility is important because the illness is a narrowing experience. You feel kind of closed in, and it's up to you to kind of find ways to become more flexible, to have more openness, more wideness, to accept help instead of staying alone. So those were some other tips. Another is actually what you do makes a difference. I found that setting small goals and bigger goals, I think we planned a trip for a few months after my treatments with the hope I would be ready to enjoy it. So that lifted my hope. And depending on and setting goals for oneself helps also. It just has to do with lifting the spirit. Another important lesson was not to go it alone, because people on islands could really benefit by reaching out and receiving help. That was something I learned also. I had one person in particular who really became my accompaniment, always checking in with me and helping arrange meals and showing that they cared. So I think that's really important to be not to be isolated when you're ill, although the tendency often is to hide and to stay away, which is why, and you often can't participate in as many things. It's one of the reasons why sometimes group programs, whether it's support groups or I used meditation group that I went to, and it was very supportive. So not isolating. Isolation is really not good. I think the last one was accepting what the universe presents. So,
correct.
You know, we don't all know what our ending is going to be. I know people who their illness, they succumbed. A close friend her daughter, who the book is dedicated to. But we also have to think about being the heroes of our own story and trying to do the things that could give us the best chances. We can do something, but we can't do everything. The world is not in our control. We don't control the strings, but we have the ability and the obligation even as human beings to try to do everything in our power to strengthen ourselves, both emotionally as well as even some mild exercise, but to try to stay connected to life as much as possible while we're going through illness. I have a list of, you know, things to do and assemble a village of support, try new things, try to cultivate gratitude, become a more discerning, questioning patient. I think I became a much tougher patient as we have gone through the system. And right. So it was a growing experience in that way.
And you include some really lovely quotes. There's a Maurice Lamb, Rabbi Lamb's quote about the hero of your own story, and mm-hmm. also the roller coaster image, which I think a lot of us use in these illness and caregiving. It's a beautiful image mm-hmm. because it is up and down and up and down.
Yeah. And this was written by a girl that the book is partially dedicated to. She was ill for up and down, up and down.
Before we started running out of time, easy question, because you allude to it, and the role of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about it. How important is it to have a sense of humor, even in the midst of just utter illness and sometimes on the lower end of that roller coaster? And just how important is it?
Well, you know, it's not something you can sort of manufacture. It is helpful to, I'm not a person who even can remember jokes. I maybe can remember one joke. so that doesn't come to me naturally, but I know that engaging in things that would lighten our hearts, and there is even a science of belly laughter that has been, you know,
right.
Presented, but it is important to try to cultivate moods other than the ones generated by being ill. So it's you probably need somebody to laugh with, and that already breaks down some of the isolation. That's one of the main thing that's hard for patients, is they often feel isolated from the world of the well, and they often tend to shrink away from social situations. And so people who can like embrace the interpersonal situations and stay involved with other people and play and laughter, I think it's good. It's all good. It doesn't mean that laughter will cure illness, although Norman Cousins, no. I think, wrote a book about laughing himself well. But that's why there are a lot of tools here, because certain tools might work for some people and other tools might work for others.
So in the book, and I think people should know, in Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness, there is a huge amount of just this very practical, down-to-earth texts and suggestions in the back, a lot of practical resources, an interesting glossary mm-hmm. of Jewish and Yiddish terms, mm-hmm. but references both to read, but also action resources, organizations, supportive resources, you call them, for a variety of different issues.
Yeah.
So really this book is, in many ways, you could use this as a one-stop shopping.
It's like a
so
manual.
for a variety of ways to navigate this illness. So Israeli, I really thank you for this. It's, again, Bridge to Healing, Finding Strength to Cope with Illness on the Great God Amazon and through bookstores. And I'm glad you are well.
Thank you.
We wish you a joyful, peaceful, and mostly healthy this stage of life.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time, and thank you for the book. It's a real gift.
Well,
so thank you.
Thank you for your response to it. And I consult it and try to live it every day. That's my goal.
Well, thank you. Toda rabah. To all of you, thank you for listening to today's edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments to me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to also visit our Jewish Sacred Aging page on Facebook. And we appreciate your continued support for our work. If you'd like to help support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these podcasts, please feel free to go to the webpage, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate icon. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Media Companies here in Cherry Hill. And our producer, we give thanks to, and has an important message for you too. We give thanks to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.
Today, you can't wait for the media to cover your company. You have to be the media. Take advantage of the power of audio and video. It's the best way to showcase your expertise to prospective customers. Let the Lubetkin Media Companies handle the technical side. We're award-winning audio and video producers. We can help you produce podcasts and video programs remotely or in our fully equipped studio in Cherry Hill. Visit beingthemedia.com for more information.